ice the fire that builds a boat, and ice the fire that sails her, ice the fire that catches a fish and takes them home to Lizer.
Sound better now? Little microphone change there. I'm Alan Sprague. This is Boat Talk. John Johansson will be joining us later on Boat Talk. First, though, we're going to start off with Sipperly Good from the Penobscot Marine Museum. Sipperly is setting up a design for the show that's going to open up next Thursday at the Marine Museum. Welcome to Boat Talk, Sipperly.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here. Why don't you just break right into a description of the next show that's coming.
Great, thank you. So we're slowly redoing our boat barns at the Penobscot Marine Museum. And so this year's theme is Peapods. So the first exhibit is Powering Up, the Evolution of the Maine Lobster Boat. And so we have our small boats and some of our models of everything that could have been a lobster boat. So peapods, dories, the Musabek reach boat, friendship sloops, and then, of course, the modern day lobster boats. And then the other one is Jim Steele's Peapod Boat Shop. Those of you who know Jim Steele, he was a prolific builder of recreational peapods down in Brooklyn. And so we have his widow and some other people donated the contents of his shop. And so we're recreating, we're mocking up sort of a boat shop in one of our exhibit buildings. So those are the two boat exhibits coming up. And then this year is Joanna Kolkard's 100th anniversary of publishing Roll and Go, which is about sea shanties. And so we've got exhibits dedicated to her. So exciting times at the museum.
Yes, it sounds very interesting. There's construction going on there right now, but parking, I assume, will be easy, a lot better shortly after the construction gets done.
Yep. If you're coming from the south, it's easy to find us. If you're coming from the north, just there's going to be some signs on the detour directing you to us. But definitely parking once you get there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, park on the grounds there and you're fine.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's go first to Peapods. Mm. We'll steal away with that.
Yes.
Jim Steele, like you said, he was prolific. He had all sorts of jigs, according to John Johansson, that were he could use to make all these changing rabbits and all this sort of other stuff. So he was almost like a production shop by himself making those. Do you know how many he made? Does he know how many he made?
Does he know any? Oh, I have, it's in my label. I always go to my labels. But in the hundreds, so about 100, 200 over 64 years, I think, 62.
64, yeah, I was going to say he cranked out at least two a year, maybe probably more when he got all his jigs going just right.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. Are there any videos, do you happen to know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, back in the 90s or early 2000s, I think, we have a whole Peapod documentary. And so they interviewed Jim Steele for that. And so we've got some great snippets to put into the exhibit.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yep.
And so you do have a very fantastic archive, not just still photographs, but videos and other, I guess you probably have some tool collections too.
We do. So he was quite ingenious, like you said, with his jigs and his different tools. And so there was, for riveting, so attaching the planks to the ribs, he had a foot operated. So he had a Dexter shoe mounted to the pneumatic pump. And so he could rivet with all his tools, pneumatic, all these things, and he just slipped his foot into the
shoe.
And away he went. So just very ingenious with some time saving.
Yeah, well, I can see it's kind of a two-handed job to hold them in place until they get riveted. So having a foot-operated riveter is probably a good idea.
And his jig was on a power lift, and so he could lift, it was a scissor lift, and so he could make the jig right to his height for just a lot of ingenious things.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So do you have any of his tools? Any of
we
those?
Do. That's So yeah. The exhibit is full of his tools, these ingenious tools.
I'm sure you'll get a lot of people who know their way a little bit around boat building who will be very interested in some of the things they have there.
Yep.
Are there any photographs in the archives of these things that are going to be in the exhibit?
Yes. So Maynard Bray, we have his photo collection. Mm-hmm. And he and Anne went and documented what Jim was doing in the shop for Wooden Boat Magazine. So we've got those photos. And then Red Boutelier, who documented boat building up and down the coast. There's some Jim Steele in there, too. So really cool.
Yeah. So you've been at the museum, I believe you said 14 years.
14
that's
years.
Quite a year. That's you obviously love it.
Yes.
How far away have some of the people come to see there? And I'm sure you get a lot of what's that questions from people who...
Right.
Yeah.
But the, in the fall, the Germans come, people from Europe come on their vacations.
Huh.
So all of people from Japan. Hmm. So it's quite amazing.
So you need a translator sometimes.
Right.
That's pretty good. It's a worldwide, well-known museum now, too.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And so let's talk a little bit about how do you get to some of the internet views of for people who might be interested in seeing just what you're doing there before they come.
Sure. So we have a YouTube channel where you can find that Peapod documentary. So that's one way. And then we have our online database of our photos and our objects. So you can definitely look up Jim Steele or Peapod or our small boat collection and see those.
So the YouTube channel is just Penobscot Marine Museum, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then there's a whole, probably a list of things underneath that.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So, the exhibit that you put together,
mm-hmm.
what was the original? Who was the original instigator of that exhibit?
So the Jim Steele items came in 2010, and the former curator, Ben Fuller, has just been dreaming of having a mock-up of his shop. So we can't do the full scope of what Ben wanted to do, but we're at least getting them out there for people to see the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we can always expand and make it better. But
do you have shavings in there and a wood stove
and
a cat?
That's the dream. But it's very toned down.
Yeah. I don't know if he had really had a cat in his shop or not. Do you happen to know? I see a lot of boat shops do.
I haven't seen any in our photo archives.
Hmm. Chummy Rich's father, Robert Rich, was particularly fond of, his shop was right on the water,
mm-hmm.
particularly fond of the ducks. And over the winter especially, he had quite a congregation of ducks that he was feeding there daily.
Yes.
I don't know what that has to do with boat talk, but... They do float.
They do float.
Yeah. So let's open up the phones, too, if anybody mm-hmm. else has any questions about what's going on Penobscot Marine Museum. If the call-in show, and the number is 207-618-8819. That's 207-618-8819 to come to Boat Talk. You have this pretty much, the show that you're putting on, going to open on Thursday, that's
right.
Pretty much a done deal, probably just in your mind as far as
Yeah, just little tweaks here and there.
Yeah.
Dust off the boats.
Yeah. But what's next?
So next year, I think we're going to do sardines.
Sardines.
Yes, because that's popular. We have amazing collections that we want to put out.
There used to be a sardine can museum in Eastport,
yes.
I believe.
Yes,
yes. Yeah. You have all kinds of strange museums. Mm-hmm. So I assume you're not going to have the olfactory section of it.
At a former museum, I had to... you could lift a flap and smell the tuna canneries. Uh-huh. So I might bring that back.
Oh, yeah. That,
yeah, but you have to lift the flap.
A scratch and sniff,
yes,
section,
exactly,
or something.
Not pervading.
Yeah. Huh. Well, let's not go to bait.
No.
207-618-8819 if you have any questions for Cipriani concerning the Penobscot Marine Museum. Is an excellent resource. I recommend anybody go online and check out what's there. And you'll also see, I'm sure there's a preview of what's coming up in this show for people who...
yes, on our website.
Yeah, on that website. So, Penobscot Marine Museum. Penobscot's pretty obvious how it's spelled there, but I'll spell it just P-E-N-O-B. S-C-O-T, MarineMuseum.org.
.org,
yes. Good old orgs. It's like WERU.org, too, is what you're listening to right now. Another good org. So I'm trying to think of what else might be coming up or going on with the museum right there now, besides this one show. You have the old boats out in the back sheds. Are they going to be open up pretty soon?
Well, that's what we're redoing. That's what these new exhibits
it's
are.
It's in one of the back sheds?
It's in one of our boat barns.
Oh, yeah.
So we're trying to group things like with like, and it's not so random of what boats are with each other. Hmm. So we've done rusticators. Last year was that redo of those boats. This year it's the Peapods, yeah, about lobstering. We'll move on to our canoe exhibits next.
Canoe, including birch bark canoes?
We've got birch bark and wooden canvas canoes. Mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting.
Any of David Moses Bridges canoes?
No. He built one on campus, but that was, we sold that one off.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, unfortunately, yeah. No.
Yeah. He's a pretty amazing guy. He was on, yep, Boat Talk several years ago.
Yes.
207-618-8819. And do you collaborate with any other canoe makers like Old Town or anything like that for your collections?
We definitely have a lot of Old Towns in the collection, and we've gone through their archives to see if there are things we can...
They have some pretty good records of,
yeah,
some of the...
some loans.
Yeah.
For the exhibit, so. And then we have the white canoes, the grays. So they're quite prolific on Penobscot River with wooden canvas canoes back in the day.
Yeah.
So we have a good collection of a little bit of everything.
Wooden canvas canoes. That's probably 100 years ago when they first started making, mm-hmm, those.
Yep.
Yeah. I wonder who would have thought of that first, of putting canvas on the outside of a boat instead of birch bark.
I know. And one of the cool Peapods we have is a canvas-covered Peapod. So they took that idea of the wooden canvas canoes, mm-hmm, and I think it was from Bilton Brewer, we think.
Uh-huh.
So just the ideas permeating back and forth.
Same idea with flat ribs on the inside.
Right. Much lighter.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Probably not good on the rocks, but it...
No. Yeah. You have to be careful.
Yeah. Yep. The museum grounds themselves, I guess, for people who haven't been there, we should probably describe that.
Right.
There's the front building you see from Route 1, but there's a lot more to it.
We have 11 buildings on campus, so it's worth spending at least half a day at the museum.
Yeah. Yeah, easily. Yeah. If you're really diligent, you can spend several days there.
Yes, you can.
It's kind of like the Smithsonian in that regard.
But it's deceptive. People think it's just the Main Street building, but we keep going back.
Yeah. Going back is sort of a, besides physically going back, we're going back in time, too.
Yeah.
So, you've been through several shows that you've set up, being there for 14 years.
Yes.
Do you remember your first one and what challenge that was?
Ooh. So the, that was way back. I think that was our summer folk exhibit. So back to the Rusticators and talking about the folks that came to Maine and how they recreated here in Maine. So that was pretty exciting. We've done fisheries exhibits and photo exhibits. So the collection's diverse, and so there's always something new to explore. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting.
The Rusticators were quite an interesting group. We had a fellow on a few years ago who talked about the Bar Harbor Ferry disaster, where it was a lot of Rusticators that unfortunately died there all at once.
Yes.
A boating accident within walking distance of the shore.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible accident. Yep. Probably some pictures of that in the Penobscot Marine Museum, too.
Yes, disasters at sea, that's always a...
Does that, you have a whole disaster section?
We had, that was one of our changing exhibits, so.
Huh.
Yep.
That, do you keep track of how many people look at different things online so you can see how many hits the disaster section is getting?
Right. The Google Analytics.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
And have you, what's some of your results?
I don't know them off the top of my head, but disasters are always exciting. Lobstering. The pirate exhibit we did back in the day.
Pirates, yeah.
Yes, that was popular.
Yeah, they're a whole different breed nowadays, but
yeah,
that's another story. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call in is 207-618-8819. 207-618-8819. Even if you're a pirate, we'll take your call.
There you go.
That was your first exhibit a long time ago, back when. But have you had any favorites that come to mind? She's thinking.
I love them all. you can't choose one of my children. No, they've just been interesting each in their own way. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited to be doing the boat barns and thinking about how we can explain those.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of these families who went to sea. And so we have a At Sea at Home exhibit about people from Searsport who sailed around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it seems romantic, but again, disasters at sea, and it's a business. And so if you didn't get a cargo in port, you had to go in ballast to the next one. So it's really interesting. It touches on international commerce and families and sailing. So very exciting.
Yep, there are some kids who were born at sea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's definitely starting out.
Yep. And so Joanna Colkard, who is the other exhibit we're doing this summer, she was born at sea.
Oh, really?
So.
I wonder what nationality that makes you.
I know.
Yeah. So we can go to John Johansson. He's on the line now. Welcome, John. Welcome to Boat Talk. Yep. He's there. Hey, hello, John. He's there.
How about it? Okay. I'm here.
You're there. Okay. We have Cipperly here. She's been talking about the Marine Museum and all the exhibit that's going to be coming up in another week. Sounds very interesting. But before
you mean their peapods?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get into all your peapods?
We didn't. No, we got into steel.
Jimmy Steele.
James Steele, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he could lay up a keel in a matter of minutes with the rabbit line.
Yep.
Yeah.
All cut in.
Yeah. Amazing.
He was amazing.
Before we get to the boatyard report, though, John, I have another question for separately concerning Marine Museum. Maybe you know the answer, too, is all those buildings out in the back, how'd they get there? Were they there originally, or were some of them imported?
Nope, everything's original. We just turned one, the carriage house maybe just turned 180 degrees or 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. But pretty much those are the houses that were right there.
Original farmhouses and barns.
Original captain's houses and farms.
What's our oldest one?
The oldest one is the Feller True Ross House. There's a date on the wall of 1837, but we think that's the addition. So we're thinking more 1815, that the original house was there.
Wow, that's pretty old.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we have one person who takes care of all those buildings.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Really impressive.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. Because it's not easy to take care of all those buildings.
No. Does he ever eat or sleep?
What do we got, 13?
He tries to eat and sleep.
Maybe.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of square footage to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially old and brick. Some of them are brick. Some of them are regular wood structures. But it is pretty impressive that he can manage all of it.
Yep.
It'd be interesting, not just for people who are looking for things marine, but also things architectural there, too.
Yeah, during the pandemic, we gave outside tours.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was amazing to learn about all the architecture.
Yeah, you know, what a cornice was.
Exactly,
and all that thing.
Yeah.
So, John, you want to go into the boatyard report now? Are we going to, you want to have any comments for Sipperly before we do that?
Well, I'm sure she talked about everything, like when the exhibit's going to open. And
yeah.
There's a ceremony the night before, if I'm not mistaken, or is it the day of Sipperly?
Day of. So we open Thursday morning, the 23rd, I believe that is. And then that night from 4 to 6 is an opening reception, and the whole campus will be open.
And the weather will be beautiful.
It will be.
Yeah, of course.
So go ahead, John. You're at the helm now.
All right. Well, if he hasn't told you, I had to make a trip to Massachusetts to take care of family affairs, and it's always been interesting when you come down here, because I grew up here in Mattapoisett until I was probably about 14, and Mattapoisett was the shipbuilding town for the whalers that went out of New Bedford. But this week, because I own Jonesport Shipyard now, I need to learn more things. So I had a long afternoon conversation with Tommy Brownell about actually how to use a jack stand the right way. I thought we were doing it right, but he's got some kind of little things that he actually does that make sense. And then how do you take care of a big hydraulic trailer? And it's really amazing how much repairs and just annual maintenance they do on these things. And some people, unfortunately, let them go until it gets to a point where you've let it go too far and the repairs are just ungodly to make the changes and get them back to where they need to be right. So that's been kind of interesting. And then this morning, probably many don't know, unless you own a wooden boat, and you don't really need to own a wooden boat to use this paint, but it was Kirby Paint Company, and they were from New Bedford, and they still make paints like Red Lead, which you usually can't find. He has this stuff. And it's all oil-based paints. So that was really interesting to talk to him this morning and kind of get a background on, some of the uses of paints. And at some point, I'm coming back down to actually interview him for that. But We'll get on with the boatyard report. One of the first places I stopped last month was Bass Harbor Boat, and that's now owned by Rich Helmke. And Alan, you can add to a lot of this sometimes because you know some of these boats. He did a major repair on a 1961 Ronald Rich boat, and last year it went under the major restoration. This year, last year they didn't touch the shelter. So they basically came back this year to do the shelter. Now, the shelter was all bright, inside and out. They stripped the varnish, and then they actually painted most of it, leaving just a little varnish. You can understand why. They get ready to take the boat out of the shop, and we have a problem. There's one of the fuel tanks, which they had looked at before while they were doing the work. Well, now it was dripping, so they had to... Fortunately, when they did the rebuild, they made it so that it was worker-friendly, let's say. So it was very easy to pop the engine out and move the tanks into where the engine was and just pull them out real easy. That helped a lot. And so that didn't take too much. And they went over to Corey Esposito's over in Surrey, which is just opposite Westmac. And they've been repaired and brought back. Now in the shop is a 1980s Chummy Rich cruiser that was built originally for a customer on Long Island Sound who had a little different idea of what a cruiser should look like than some people. And she was in to have her engine replaced. She had a small block Chevy, and this was being replaced with a 250 horsepower four-cylinder Yanmar diesel. And fortunately, they ordered this last year, which... You know, because sometimes getting things parts quickly is sometimes very, very difficult. But this one was sitting and waiting when the boat came back. Now, last year they did a lot of hull work, and this year they've done that, and then they went to work, and they had to really do a lot of reworking. Whoever had replaced the engine before had kind of done work that Rich didn't care for, and he redid some of it. So he redid around the engine beds and then the cabin top. And he's also trying to make the boat look more like a Down East cruiser. And for those that are familiar with a Penbow, they were built back in the 50s in Rockport. And they're trying to make it look more like that. Then in the other bay, he's got a bunker in Ellis 36, which is in for regular maintenance. And coming in right after her is a bunker in Ellis 42, also for regular maintenance. Next year, they're already booked, and they're looking at doing a major rebuild on a 36-foot Robert Rich from the 1950s. And so that's their big project for next year. Billings Diesel and Marine in Stonington. In the main shop, now it's always fun to go into their main shop because there's more engines on that shop floor than you can believe, and I don't know how they keep track of whose is whose and all of that. I'm sure they're marked somewhere. But the main Marine Patrol's boat, Maine, was in there, and she was getting repowered. She had an 800 horsepower 3406E Caterpillar, and that was being replaced with a man, and I'm not sure how much horsepower that is. And then they were going to do some modifications. She was going to have an A-frame added along with a winch, and she's no longer going to work for the Marine Patrol but going to work for the Science Division. Then the Hurricane Island boat Vigilance was in and is getting a new deck installed. And Nor'easter, she's on the inside railway, which is in the shop that's on the outside by the thoroughfare, and she's just basically getting her annual maintenance. Now, that's a William Hand boat. He was originally from Portland, Maine, big designer back in the 20s, 30s, 40s. And then he came down here and actually lived in Fairhaven, which is right in the town opposite New Bedford in the harbor. So, and that boat used to get used a lot. Alfred Osgood's boat, which is Starlight Express 3, which is a Wayne Beale 36. He was in for some glass work. And then... they've got all kinds of backlogs on repowers. He's got a BHM that's coming up from New Jersey, another boat from Massachusetts coming up to get repowered. You know, and he's finding that it's basically the commercial fishing industry that is still their major customer. And I've always told people, if you ever have a problem finding a part or a piece for an engine, always call Greg Sanborn down at Billings Diesel and Marine, because more than likely he may have that part right there. Now, Flowers Boat Shop's in Walpole, which is on your way down to South Bristol, and he has two boats in the main shop. He has a Flowers 38, which is being finished off as a charter boat for a customer from Gloucester, Massachusetts. And everything under the platform was done, and they were getting the wiring finished up, and then they were going to be able to drop the platform down. She's powered with an 800 horsepower Scania, and for accommodation, she has a queen berth forward with head and separate shower, and she's scheduled to go over sometime this summer. The other boat is a Flowers 43. She's being finished out as a cruiser sport fisherman for a customer from New Hampshire. She's a lot more complicated, powered with a 900 horsepower 16 liter Scania. She has a stateroom forward with a very large master head, then a guest stateroom with its own separate head. Then up on the mid-level is a full galley. And then there's up in the shelter, there's an L-shaped settee. On the opposite side is another settee. And then there's, of course, the helm station. And it even sports a retractable swim platform. Now, in the lower shop, they just put in a 38-foot Flowers sport fisherman that looked pretty new, but actually it had been out for 6 years. And she was for a customer from Newburyport. And they got just a little bit of minor fiberglass work to do, and then just general maintenance. Now, Friendship Boatworks is on the road between Friendship and Waldoboro. And he had two boats in the shop. One was a Young Brothers 33 lobster boat for a local owner called the Melanie Marie II. And they went in and basically they refurbished her. They worked on the house. They worked on paint. But I asked Randy Young, who is one of the Young Brothers' children. I can't remember if it's one of the twins' boys. And I can't remember if it was, I think it's Arvin was his father, not Arvid. Might have been Arvid, but. Anyways, and he never finished off a Young Brothers 33, which I thought was kind of interesting. But he thinks that either Phil Lash or Wes Lash finished this boat off, but he wasn't quite sure which one. And I looked on Wes Lash's list, or actually the list for either of them, and it's not on my list at all. So I've got to find out who did the action. And then the boat on the opposite side was a Wayne Beal 46 called Isaac and Colby, which it looks like a really, really big boat, but it's mostly because the top was custom built. And that's because Keith Simmons, who owns the boat, is a pretty big guy, over 6 feet. And the engine underneath the deck is just a little thing. It's only got 1,200 horsepower in it. It's a man. And so that's why, you know, he put a step in the deck, and then he had to raise the cabin up just to, for him and the height of the engine. So it's actually a pretty big house. And they had to do just a few small repairs. One was a lifting rail that was leaking. And then the other thing was they checked the exhaust system and they had lost a supporting bracket. And then so they replaced the exhaust tube on that port side and then had to put down a rubber decking because they had to rip up the deck a little bit to get into it. So not a big job. And then they've got something coming in, mostly repair works coming in after this. Highland and Brown, which is down in Brooklyn, they've got a really neat 32-foot Matthew Smith-designed walk-around cruiser. And the owner had a boat that was designed by Doug Highland, and he loved the boat, but it was just not as comfortable as he'd like. It didn't have the range, and it didn't have the speed. So he went to Matthew Smith to do this design. And she's pretty close to being done. They were trying to put finishing touches on her. And, you know, so let's see. She's got all kinds of bells and whistles, which the other boat didn't have. And they kind of talked him out of the bells and whistles, you know, his first boat, that sort of thing. But he came back and actually says, I'd really like more bells and whistles. So this thing has got a gyro, has zip wake trim tabs, twin Yamaha outboards with joystick controls and a thruster. So that's all of you need for technology, I would think. So the design actually kind of evolved a couple of times over the winter. And one of them, they started with a passageway in the center. And that actually turned out to be changed. And so it's walk around. And but the pilot house, which actually was going to be relatively small, a center console almost idea. Well, now it's big enough so that it's got sliding doors on the sides. Down below, there's a single berth, and really not for overnighting. It's for taking a nap more than anything else, and a simple head. So really what it is, it's a day boat. And with his other boat, he was a real strong fisherman. But this one, basically, Elry was telling me that the owner only wants to use this for entertainment. But he also added this acres of varnish on this boat. The teak deck is varnished. The shelter is all varnished. But the varnish is on veneer, so which that will help a little bit. There's not a lot of solid wood construction. And this boat's going to be ready in the end of spring and delivered to the new owner. Then there was a Hershoff Rosinante that is actually designed by L. Francis Hershoff from Marblehead, Massachusetts. And I probably back in the 40s, I would guess. And it was kind of modified by Doug Hyland. So he gave her a little more beam and he made it into a yawl and not a catch. And she was built in 2001. And basically, when she was built, they put an electric engine in her. Well, the electric part of power in a boat back then was pretty archaic. And over the last 23 years, there's been a lot of changes in that industry. But in the interim, not long after he owned the boat, I think it was only a year he had the electric motor and he didn't like it at all. He put a nanny diesel in and was done by somebody else. Well, the nanny diesel finally decided that it has had enough and needs to be replaced. So, but they've actually talked him into trying to do electric power again, and he agreed. And so that's what they've done this time. And then she's just getting her normal annual maintenance. Now, in the side loft, they basically have a, I call it a scow, and hopefully I didn't offend anybody by doing that. But she's an open boat. Similar to the boats that you used on the bateaus that were used on the rivers to manage lumbering and stuff. And she's powered with an electric motor. And they did that and realizing what he had to work with. He's on Craig Pond. And at Craig Pond, there's some of the residences you can't get to other than by boat. And he's one of them. So, but the boat is actually modeled after a Harry Bryant's model, which was called Trout, and with some modifications. So her bottom is plywood, her top sides are riveted cedar planks, and finished bare, and the electric motor and steering console, and that's pretty much it. And she'll top speed at about 8 or 9 knots. But, you know, because they did some thinking about this, she's going to be able to cruise that whole lake with that electric engine without a problem at all. But he did warn of one thing, is that there are certain applications electricity and electric motors are just not good for yet, you know, in this, you know, saltwater environment or marine environment, because it just doesn't have the duration and the longevity. Let's see, there's another Rosinante, and she had some frame repair, and they put a new transom in an Albury skiff. And then right now they're trying to get all of the storage customers done and ready and in the water. Long Cove Marine, sometimes the engine guys, it's interesting, but they do a lot of boat work. You know, number one, when you repower a boat and you change the motor from, you know, one size to another or one manufacturer to another, you got to do modifications. And in the shop was Captain Jack. She's from Stonington, lobster boat from Stonington. And her C9 Cat was replaced with a QSL9 Cummins. And they had to make some modifications, not a lot. And they also, now we're driving the steering off the back of the gear instead. Miss Whitney, which is a 40-plus-year-old Stanley 44, she's being repowered. They removed her C18 Caterpillar and replaced it with a 750-horsepower John Deere. And the shaft has been in there. They think it's got 50,000 hours on it. They know that she's had three engine replacements since the shaft was replaced. They gutted the engine room, cleaned it all out. They changed the keel coolers over to dry exhaust. And then they had to do just other minor modifications, some glass work, you know, and then put down a rubber Duraback deck. Then they had another Osman 35 that was in before, and that got a 1,000 horsepower FPT engine in it. So then it got a new plywood platform and rubber decking. That 1,000 horsepower in an Osman 35, that boat was going to move pretty well. Another boat they worked on, and one that's been poking around the coast for about 6 years and has never been in the water, is the 46-foot Muscle Ridge called Workhorse. Now, she started her life at Hutchinson Composite, who builds the Muscle Ridge hulls. And then she went down to what I call Barracuda Boatworks in Steuben, but I was told by Moses, who runs Barracuda, that that's definitely not the way to pronounce it. And then it went down to Berwick. And I'm not sure how much work got done down there, but then the owner brought it back up to Deep Cove in Deer Isle. And this is not a simple boat. It's a very, very complex sport fisherman, cruiser, whatever you want to call it. But it's got all kinds of accessories on it, you know. But he was, Eric, who runs Long Cove, was able to actually get the owner on page with him, and they were able to work through getting things straightened out and getting it into the water. She went in the water. I haven't heard how she went, but I do know that she went in about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then another one that went in right around the same time was a Calvin Beal 44 that was just finished off at Oceanville Boatworks in Sunrise. And she was to be launched on the 9th of May. So she was sitting also down at Billings Diesel and Marine waiting to go over aboard. Now, Strouts Point Wharf Company, that's down in South Freeport Marine. That is one of the most interesting places to walk through. And it's also kind of sad in a way because Kim, who runs the yard, told me that, you know, he takes care of a lot of classic boats. And unfortunately, a lot of people aren't coming to buy these classic boats. It used to be that you could not purchase a Concordia. Well, now you almost can't give them away. And it comes down to the fact that it costs $30,000 to $40,000 a year to maintain one of these boats over the year. And so some people just don't want to bite that. One boat major project they did was on it's called Her Nibs now. It used to be Bernadette. She was built by Johns Bay Boat Company of South Bristol in 2005. Well, last year she went up on the rocks and damaged about 12 feet of her keel. So they replaced the keel, whatever was affected, and the keel bolts. And then they had to, of course, replace the platform and then put her all back together. And she's ready, and she's got new owners that live in Belfast. So you'll see her around the Belfast area. Salt Spray is a 36-foot downeaster, and her aft sole had actually rotted out, and they replaced that with Coosa board. A Concordia 41. Now, she came in, and it was discovered that she had a real problem with her stern post. And instead of trying to take this whole boat apart and take the planking away from the stern post and the horn timber, they basically went inside, replaced the rotted part, and then fabricated some structure around it to make sure that it doesn't have any movement in it at all, so it's all sturdy. And that saved the owner thousands and thousands of dollars to do it that way instead of the other way. But it's real interesting to go in there and see the type of old boats, like an old 6-meter. They had a Rosinante in there. Concordias. They have three or four of them sitting there. There was a Stanley, real nice Stanley cruiser. Of course, that's fiberglass, but there's a lot of woodwork in that Stanley. And then the last place that we'll talk about is Wound Up Marine. Now, I've known John Album for a long time. He graduated from Maine Maritime Academy, I believe in 2005, went to sea for almost 20 years. And he worked on, big ships, and then he did tugboats, and then he went out into the Gulf and worked on the oil rigs. But he has bought, I can't remember what the name of it was before, but as you go into the industrial park in Booth Bay, he's up there. He's the first building you come to on the left side that has any boats around it. And he does small boats. And in the shop, he had a Pedebco 21 that he was trying to chase down an electrical issue, which he narrowed down to the voltage regulator. And then he had it next to her was a Duffy 26 that was finished off by AJ Enterprises of Winter Harbor. And that's an interesting boat because it always kind of stays within the family. In fact, John owned it. The former owner owned it, and when John sold it, he sold it to the former owner's sister. Sister. So it's back now, and all she's getting is just annual maintenance, mostly buff and wax. They've got a couple of boats in there that are being repowered. They store about 40 boats, all of them small. He's not looking to get any bigger, which is what most yachts do today. You know, you find your sweet spot, stay there. And let's see, that's about it. Oh, I would like to mention, lobster boat racing is coming up in another month or thereabouts. But we lost one of our racers last week. Bruce Ingert, who owns Thunderbolt, which is a red boat that has been infrequent for the last several years. They've been trying to get engine straightened out and hooked up and trying to find the right parts and pieces. And then, of course, Bruce Ingert Sr., who passed away, also had a heart issue 2 or 3 years ago, and that precluded him from coming out and racing. And then last year, one of his helpers had an issue, and they didn't want to race without him. And so, unfortunately, I was informed Sunday night that he had passed away. He comes from Booth Bay. And hopefully we see the boat out on the race course this year. The boat has been down at Jeremy Beals and Jonesport. I know they painted her. I don't know if they did any other work to her. And I think the last I knew she was still there. So, but hopefully they put it together and get her out for this this summer. So that's it.
Okay. For people who don't know just what the lobster boat races are, let's give a quick description of that in different classes. And it's basically a drag race. And it's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch, as you know, because we had you out there, 3 or 4 years ago?
In Bass Harbor, yeah.
Yeah, Bass Harbor on the barge. Didn't we make you a judge?
No.
You talked your way out of it? Well, but anyways, lobster boat racing is we start with, it's a running start. You have a start boat, and they have a flag person on board the boat. And when you get up to what they think is a good speed, and the boats are all kind of lined up, and I mean kind of because you got to watch them because some of them who've done this a long time will lag back and then they'll try to judge when you're going to drop the flag. And then it's a straight shot right up the course. And it ranges anywhere from 3/4 of a mile to just over a mile. We don't go much more than that. The problem is that most engines that are built for these races aren't built right. What you need is you need an engine that can actually last a long time at top end. You know, dragster motors are nice, but they're only meant to go 3 or 4 seconds. But we don't have very many of them. We may have one this year. I heard there's an alcohol engine coming that has close to 1,800 to 2,000 horsepower. I'll believe it when I see it. That's supposed to be Black Diamond coming off of Islesboro. Glenn Holland, who raced the Red Baron years ago, that had a 1,200 horsepower top. most of the time it ran at 1,100 horsepower, and that was a Ford motor. And that got up to about 58-something miles an hour and held the record for a little while. We break them down into classes. The classes are usually done by gas or diesel, and then you break them down further into boat lengths and then horsepower. Of course, the big, you know, today there's more bigger boats, especially down east. I have a big problem with 40-foot plus classes because sometimes I've got, you know, one time I think I had 30-something boats in one class. So we had to run heats, and then the top three boats of each heat got to race in the finals, and then we picked the top boat from that. It's a good time. I mean, we start in Booth Bay on Father's Day weekend, the Saturday, and then on Sunday, which is Father's Day, we're in Rockland. The next weekend, we're on Sunday, we're in Bass Harbor. The weekend after that, we go to Jonesport, and then we go to Stonington, and then Friendship, Harpswell, Winter Harbor, Pemaquid, Portland, well, Long Island, which is off of Portland, and then Portland. Portland being the final race of the year. Now, a lot of these races are done for fundraisers, and Portland is one of the biggest ones and one I really like seeing support for because the money we raise from the Portland race goes to help with the scholarship of fishermen's children that are going on to college. Last year at the Fisherman's Forum, we gave them a check for $7,500, which is really, really good because that money is divided against to everybody equally. And so I can't remember how much each child got last year, but I think it was around $1,500. So, yeah. And then some of them are really good to come and see because there's good vantage points. Rockland is probably one of the best. Because you can stand on the jetty. Jonesport's really good. Bass Harbor's not bad. You can stand by the ferry terminal. Jonesport's the bridge. Stonington is a little harder because we race out in the middle of the channel. Friendship's harder because you have to kind of look from the dock, and there's boats in the middle, so sometimes you have a hard time seeing the whole thing. Harpswell's, you go down to Mitchell Field, and we race off Mitchell Field, which is not in Potts Harbor. It's on the other side. Then you go to Winter Harbor is really good because you can actually see it from the Acadia National Park. Pemaquid's easy and really good because you go to the fort. And the fort is we probably get several hundred people easily at the fort every year to watch the races. Portland's a little harder, both races in Portland, which is Long Island and Portland. You can watch it from Munjoy Hill or the Eastern Prom pretty easily, but unless you've got a VHF, and we're always on Channel 10, you can actually listen to everything that we're doing.
So are any of these races documented at the Penobscot Marine Museum?
Of course, yes. They are.
Yeah, we've got some great race photos.
Yeah,
and you got T-shirts too,
and T-shirts and awards,
and photographs. Because all my photographs are going to go to the museum, so
and
they
John,
have access to all my photos.
Yep, and John mentioned Bass Harbor Boats. We've got the boat plans from Bass Harbor Boats, and also from the Lash Shop. So if anyone is interested in those designs, come to the museum.
And Wilbur.
Yeah. That's new. Yep.
So, PenobscotMarineMuseum.org is where you can go to see all this information. Pretty interesting.
Yep.
And then next Thursday, Penobscot Marine Museum is the place where you can go.
Yes.
To see the museum, to see the whole exhibit.
Come have some snacks.
Yeah. Oh, what kind of snacks are you going to be
having? I haven't heard yet. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, we usually have good snacks.
We do.
Yeah.
Are they somehow marine related, you know, like smoked mussels or lobster bisque or whatever?
No, not that good, maybe. But
we could make it happen if you'd come.
Just for you.
So So, John, we're about ready to wrap up boat talk here. I don't think we have time for another phone call, so I won't even give the phone number. But we got 3 minutes left before we get around to ending the show. Is there any other things that you wanted to add before we say goodbye to the Penobscot Marine Museum?
Oh, to Sipoli?
Yeah.
No, I think people should come in and see what we've got. I think a lot of people, you know, they drive by the museum. They always mean to come in. And, you know, of course, you know, something gets in the way or they need to get somewhere and they always promise to come back. Well, you know, come back. I think in a lot of cases, people would be shocked by what we have. You know, the industries that were on this coast were impressive. And, you know, there's no other place that has some of the stuff that we've got. We've got an incredible photo department. Those you can all see online. You can sit at home and watch it on your computer. But, you know, to actually see some of the houses, and I know Cipriani's done a lot of work in making those houses as authentic as possible with what they contain in them, you know, and putting these exhibits together. Like, you know, one of the big ones she did this winter was the evolution of the Maine lobster boat. And I'm sure that that was kind of eye-opening, wasn't it, Cipriani?
It was. And I just want to shout out to Richard Stanley and Isaac Beale and Willis Beale, Dougie Dodge, and Alonzo Alley, and
Maynard Bray.
Maynard Bray, totally. Yeah. And who was... I forget, but everyone who spoke to me about the design of lobster boats, because it's elusive what really is the origin of the design, but they did a good job of helping me out.
Yeah,
Joe Lowell? Sorry, I think that was Joe Lowell.
Yeah, also. Joe Lowell was there that day. We did it down at the shipyard.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's a difficult subject and a dangerous one to get in. And I think Richard Stanley's got it right, that it's a conglomeration up and down the coast of everybody's ideas.
Yep, totally.
And so.
It's a gem is what it is.
It is.
Yep. So thanks to Pippin down in the engine room for keeping WERU going. And thanks to Cipriani Good for joining us today from the Penobscot Marine Museum.
Thank you.